Marhaba, and welcome to the Matrix Green Pill, where real people connect.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Matrix Green Pill podcast. I'm your host, Tilmari Hutchison, and today I have another remarkable guest with me. Bushra Rabai, founder and chief creative officer at Aurora Hikma, is on a mission to connect cultures through language. She's bridging gaps in Arabic content, empowering young women in Algeria, and recently spoke at the Saudi Ministry of Culture's Science Fiction Conference. Get ready for an inspiring conversation. Bushra, welcome and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Mary. It's great to be here.
Getting right into it, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
My name's Bushra, as you said, and I am the founder of Aurora Hikma. We do what we call translation for marketing purposes, which is a fancy way to say creative translations, and also fancy way to say that we specialize in doing it mainly for marketing. I personally am of a mixed background. I was born in Saudi Arabia to a Sri Lankan mom and an Algerian dad. I lived there for 23 years, after which I moved to Algeria. That was almost 6 years ago now. I've been in Dubai now for 1 year.
What is it that brought you to Dubai?
I used to freelance back when I was still living in Saudi. So I used to freelance back when I was still living in Saudi, and a lot of my clients were based in the UAE. So it kind of went from there. Obviously, when I moved to Algeria, some of my clients still continued working with me. Dubai was always a big focus on where I marketed myself because there's a huge need here for Arabic speaking specialists to help businesses with their marketing needs, reaching Arabic speaking consumers online and offline as well.
So it was a business decision.
It was a business decision, but it also was a bit personal because I wanted to be back in the region. I couldn't do life in Algeria as much as I'd wanted to.
Okay, so you've certainly had some experiences living in different countries, experiencing different cultures, which also will help, surely, in the work that you do, focusing on Arabic content.
Yes, one of the things that really helped me was the fact that when we were growing up, there was not a very specific culture that we adhered to at home. It was kind of, we took all of the best things of both my parents' cultures. And then also there was the Saudi culture in which we were living in. And we took a little bit of everything. We have a thing in our family. We say that we technically are cultureless because we don't really identify 100% with one culture fully. We just appreciate different bits and pieces from different cultures and we just fit them together into a puzzle that makes us us.
I love that. Cultureless in a positive way.
Yeah, and I think what really has helped with that is the fact that, you know, because I've been speaking both English and Arabic from a very young age, and this is a catchphrase I tell everyone that I've been a translator since I was 3 years old. But what I really have noticed is that this really helps me with translating ideas rather than words.
Right, that makes sense. Before we get more into that, I want to ask you a bit more about that later on. Can you tell us what is it that inspired you to start Aurora Hikma?
I realized over time that with my family members who didn't speak English or read English well enough to understand complicated concepts, it was always very difficult to share anything that I would like to share with them. For example, let's say I was researching something about a health condition that I suspect I might have or a family member might have, and I would go online and I would find all these great articles in English that explained everything to someone who basically with basic, I don't know, I think you could say even eighth grade science, you can understand. If I want to share it with this person who doesn't read English well enough, that they would understand it, it becomes an issue, because then I would have to actually spend time explaining to them what the article says. It was very time consuming. I realized that there are lots of businesses out there that can also benefit from this, because why do businesses put out content? It's because they want to provide value to their consumers. If you want to provide value to your consumers, you need to be able to reach them in the languages that help them, not in the language that helps you. So if you are doing business in the UAE or in the broader GCC region, and you're not putting out content in Arabic, you're missing out on giving value to all of these consumers who would rather read in Arabic than in English. And that is very frustrating.
That makes absolute sense. And also, if you are just using Google Translate or ChatGPT, there's a good chance that the meaning will get lost in translation.
Let's not talk about the meaning getting lost, because there are worse scenarios than the meaning getting lost. I mean, the meaning getting lost is a very simple way to put it. I'll tell you one thing, and this is something that I came across early in my career. There was a business based in Dubai. Unfortunately, she had to close her business down. She was running a fabric shop online, and she knew early on that she needed to reach the wider GCC region, and to do that, she needed to do her website in Arabic. So she brought this plugin that basically allowed you to screen Google Translate's work and edit it and put it on your website. One of my first assignments with her was to translate her homepage using the help of this tool. I remember spending 2 hours on it, and it was just the homepage. I eventually told her there was so many mistakes that I'd rather do this from scratch than have to fix Google Translate's work. So fabrics, right? You know, lace fabrics. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with them. So the word lace was translated as shoelaces in Arabic. So technically, the website was trying to sell shoelace fabric. So this is more than just being a meaning lost in translation, right? Because this is changing the entire product.
That's absolutely crazy. Yeah, so that's very dangerous.
And this is a very small example, by the way. I mean, there are big issues that have happened because of Google Translate or any other machine translation that works in the same way. ChatGPT is literally one level higher than that. I haven't done a lot of experimentation with it, but I've seen that the generic ChatGPT, it's helpful in a way, but then it makes basic mistakes like switching masculine to feminine in Arabic. So if you have a feminine noun, it suddenly puts in a sentence where everything else is masculine, which makes it sound weird. I think there's still a long way for AI even to come to understand Arabic properly to be able to emulate it, because I think these systems are not built with an Arabic speaker at the core. So even if you go to look at like a computer system or whatever, everything is in English. You cannot build, I'm pretty sure you cannot build an AI without using English in the programming, in different things. That makes it that its default thinking language is English, and then you come to teach how to think in Arabic. That's going to take ages.
That's like almost any person that learns a second language. They're always thinking in their first language and almost have to translate in their head, or, you know, it's always the second. It's not your thinking language. It's just a, sort of the language you're speaking in, but you're always thinking in your mother tongue.
That's true. I think it's easier for a lot of people to learn English and think in English as they improve with their daily practice and more. But for someone to learn Arabic and think solely in Arabic, it's a very difficult task. I haven't yet seen someone who hasn't grown up around Arabic somehow who can think purely in Arabic from an Arabic speaker's perspective.
So interesting. Let's go back to your multicultural background. How has that influenced your approach to bridging the gap in Arabic content?
I think it's simply because I realized early on that while different cultures look at things differently, fundamentally, the basics are the same. Everyone needs to eat, drink, sleep, and go to the bathroom. There is so much about what is fundamental human nature that is then the foundation of culture. And over time, there are differences that show, but then also things can be so different yet so similar in the same way. I can give you an example is that old wives' tales. Every country has their own old wives' tales. Then I can see similarities between the stuff that I hear in Algeria and the stuff that I'd heard from my grandma growing up about different things. For example, how women should rest a lot after they give birth. When I had my daughter, I had a C-section and I was told by the doctor that I should get up and walk immediately as soon as I get the feeling back in my legs because that's going to help me heal. I had my aunt with me and this is my mom's sister. She told me that whenever she or even my mom gave birth, they never dealt with the baby up 2 months, except for breastfeeding, because my grandma would come and she would do everything. And it was basically the same idea they have in Algeria, except that now doctors are saying something different because doctors know better, but still your mother-in-law and your grandma-in-law will tell you to just lie down on the bed and don't get up. So it's a strange how two countries on different sides of the planet. So for me nowadays, it's no longer about finding the differences, but rather looking at the similarities between cultures. We all want to connect with other people as humans. And the more we can connect people with each other properly, the more we can transcend this language barrier, whatever barrier that we put in between. I feel like there are lots of concepts that are quite similar in many cultures because no one is talking about them, because no one is looking at them and analyzing them. People think, oh, this is my culture and that's why this is how it's supposed to be because it's part of my culture. But then you might have a culture on the other side of the planet that literally has the same rule, even know where it came from, because probably there was no contact between these two cultures back in the day.
I love this viewpoint and this way of looking at the world, looking for the similarities rather than the differences. That's excellent. Now, it seems like your move to Algeria was a significant turning point for you. Can you share some of the challenges you faced and the moment you decided to organize the Translatathon event?
Yes. When I moved to Algeria, there was a lot of new things happening in my life. There was a new country. I just got married. We had a surprise baby. So there was a lot of stuff that was happening. At that time, one of the most significant things I realized was that despite all of this, what was constant was the work that I was doing. And I also realized that there was a huge gap in the market, especially in Algeria, where there are loads and loads of kids who graduate from translation school, but then they have no future prospects aside from working for like an official translation office where they translate documents that are basically, you know, medical certificates and birth certificates and legal documents. And legal documents also are very rare, we can say, because there's very little international trade that's happening with Algeria to get to the point where people want to translate contracts and things like that. So it was a very bleak prospect, in my opinion, because translation is all about creativity. I mean, it's one step lower than writing, right? If you want to write a book, you have to be quite creative to be able to come up with that. If you want to translate a book, you have to be almost as creative as the writer. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to match the originality of making it sound like you're writing in your language that you're translating to. So you have to be quite creative. And then when you are restricted with these career prospects where all you do is translate basically the same thing over and over, it just is a little sad to me, honestly, more than anything else. So I decided that I wanted to start recruiting people to help me in my business from Algeria, because what I know is that a lot of people in Algeria, especially in the younger generation, they're very fluent in English. They're very teachable. They're very capable. They just don't have the right resources that allow them to flourish and grow. So I started a Translatathon because I saw that gap. And then there was another gap that I saw was that the Wikipedia in English has millions of pages of content. I think it's somewhere in the tens of millions. But then the Arabic Wikipedia is quite significantly less. I think it's about 10% or so of the English Wikipedia. And again, going back to the whole idea that I wanted to start my business because I wanted to share valuable content with people who didn't speak English. Came back to this idea with Wikipedia. I was like, okay, it's a free resource. It's open for everyone. Yes, some things are not very reliable. Generally speaking, the most important parts of Wikipedia are quite reliable because you can always go back down to the references and click on them and make sure that everything is coming from real sources. So I started the translateathon to bridge these two gaps by selecting a set of articles that we then had a training session with the students on how to, first of all, set up articles on Wikipedia and then also how to properly translate. That's how we combine these two things. We did it in terms of both contributing to the Wikipedia and also enhancing their translation skills.
That was an excellent idea, an opportunity to contribute for the larger audience out there and an opportunity for the people who partook to improve their own translation skills. Now, I know that you are very passionate about offering remote work to Algerian women. And I know you also mentioned that you are now based in Dubai. What are some of the insights and also the unique challenges and opportunities of operating in both Algeria and Dubai?
It's quite challenging because Dubai is, I would say, 100 miles ahead in terms of how things go smoothly here. Whereas in Algeria, it's very bureaucratic. There's a lot of hurdles you have to jump through and hoops and things. It's not easy at all. Thankfully, I have people who have a lot of experience with doing business in Algeria who are advising me. One of them is my husband. I think what is really most challenging is the fact that sometimes the internet is not very reliable. And this annoys me every time I go back that I then have issues with the internet. When I'm here, I can assure clients if there is something that's running late, I can let them know that it's just another hour and we'll sort this out for you. I am not here because I'm on a holiday or I'm traveling to Algeria to do something that I absolutely need to be there for in the business. Then I'm the one who is stuck with not proper enough internet, and that causes me to feel a lot of anxiety, even though I feel like a lot of clients whom I have understand. And they're very appreciative of the fact that we do try to support women as much as we can and offer them these opportunities that are very difficult to come by in Algeria.
Experiencing it for yourself first and also gives you empathy for your workers and for the women in Algeria, understanding the frustrations they have. They might have done the job and they can't get it to you simply because there's no internet. So that does also, you know, help you understand their position.
Yes, absolutely. Having that perspective is very important as a business owner, because I know a lot of people who are based here in Dubai who then work with partners from all over the world. And some of these can be so-called third world countries that have issues in terms of connectivity and all that. Yes, it might be great some days, but then once in a while, something has to happen. Electricity goes off or whatever. And not a lot of people have that perspective to be able to handle those delicate situations. I'm really grateful that I do have that perspective and I'm able to understand that.
What advice would you give to businesses looking to expand their reach in Arabic-speaking markets, especially those in the UAE and Saudi Arabia?
My main piece of advice is that you have to absolutely have to hire someone who is going to be able to reach the local audience in the right way. Because look, there are tons of Arabic speakers here in the UAE or even in Saudi Arabia who work in all kinds of parts of this industry. However, unfortunately, a lot of them don't really have the ability to give that Arabic that is very GCC based, or like we say, Khaliji Arabic, because unfortunately, there are lots of expats who live in these countries, but then they stay within their bubbles. They don't move with the local communities, so they don't even have an understanding of the dialect. I met, I think, three or four different people who were born and raised here in the UAE, some in Abu Dhabi and some in Dubai, they would say that they do not understand Emiratis when they speak Arabic. I mean, the local Emirati dialect. And that was a bit shocking to me because we grew up in Saudi. Yes, we did not speak Saudi Arabic at home. We spoke it with everyone outside the house. It was a little bit shocking for me. How could these kids grow up here but then have no understanding of the local Arabic?
That's amazing to think that there is such a big difference that people would even say that they couldn't understand it. That is quite remarkable.
There is quite a remarkable difference in Arabic dialects. And I know that there are lots of words that sound strange, but I'm very good at researching them. And there is no official dictionary at the moment for all of these dialects. There are resources online. And then also, I believe that one of the really important things that a translator should have is that they should be able to pick up things from context. If I'm listening to a piece of audio in which someone is narrating their life, and then they mention a few words that might be very unique to their own dialect, I should be able to pick up what that means from the surrounding words that are in the same sentence or in the same piece of audio. Because if I'm not able to do that, then how am I going to really say that I can translate something properly if I don't really get new words from their own context?
So it's definitely a lot more complicated than people might realize to create a very good copy or a very good translation into Arabic.
It is very difficult, but then it's also quite easy if you have the resources, if you know the right way to do it, which is basically try to understand that not everything that maybe, let's say someone who's from Syria or someone even from Algeria, let's say, who comes here and they try to break into the translation market, they need to understand one very fundamental thing is that even in what we call modern standard Arabic, which we use in writing, not casual stuff, but more formal stuff, even in that, there are differences from region to region. If you are in the UK, someone will tell you to walk on the pavement, but in the US, someone will tell you to walk on the sidewalk. So it's pretty much the same idea. It's just a lot more nuanced in Arabic because there is the written Arabic and then there is the spoken Arabic dialects, which can even differ from city to city.
So interesting. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your perspectives and your insights into the Arabic language and translations. It's been absolutely fascinating. Now it's time for our rapid fire game show segment where I'll hit you with some quick and fun questions to get to know you even better. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Let's dive in. Your favorite book you've translated?
Honestly, I have only translated one book under my name at the moment. I would say it's my favorite book in terms of someone who read it and understood it because it was quite complex. The name is Ancillary Justice, translated by me, written by Anne Leckie. It was a triple award-winning book, and I didn't know that at the time when I was translating it. I'm pretty sure if I had known that it won 3 awards, I wouldn't have taken up the job at the time because this was literally 7 years ago, and I was basically just 2 years into my translation career. But thankfully, I've been told that I did a very good job of it, so I'm very proud of that.
Well done. Congratulations. Okay, next question. One word to describe your management style.
Inspiring.
Oh, inspiring is a good one. I like that. Okay, here's another challenge for you. Describe Aurora Hikma in 3 words.
So you'll find this on our website. It says, we are women, we're wise, we do words. So 3 words, women, wise, words.
Very nice. What's your favorite dessert?
Its base is brownies, and then there is strawberry slices in between, another layer of brownies, and then topped with cookies and cream ice cream.
Wow, that sounds yummy.
You should try it.
I will try. That sounds really delicious. What is one thing you do every day, no matter how busy you are?
I try to take 5 minutes to think about where my life is going.
Like a gratitude thinking or a reflections?
More like, what can I do tomorrow to fix what I didn't do today so I can be ahead and more towards achieving my goals?
Lovely. Thank you very much. Well, thank you for playing along. That was fairly easy. Now, before we wrap up, I'd like to ask you about your green pill moment. So could you share an inspiring or life-changing experience that you have gone through, your green pill moment?
I honestly think my green pill moment issues that were going in my personal life, and I realized that a lot of it was because I was giving other people's expectations a lot of thought. And the day I decided that I am divorcing everyone's expectation of who I am and who I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to do in life was the day I actually received a lot of respect and even heard a lot of commendations from people I was expecting to hear a lot of criticism from, because that is what usually they used to give me.
How insightful. What an excellent experience to go through that, to realize that when you start living to your own standards and not what other people expect, things change and things fall into place in a way you were not expecting. That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that experience with us, and also your incredible journey that you've had so far. Your story is both inspiring and compelling, and I'm so sure our audience is going to be really motivated by it. Now, before we wrap up, could you please tell our audience where they can connect with you? And we'll also include this in the show notes.
They can connect with me on Instagram, personally on my personal account at bushra.rubiai. That's bushra.rebiai. And then the business account is at Aurora Hikma. That's AURORAHIKMA. And then we're also on LinkedIn for all of you more professional people out there who want to connect in a more professional way. We do have a Facebook page for the company as well.
Thank you so much for that. And thank you again for being with me today. It's been excellent. Your experiences and advice will undoubtedly resonate with our wonderful listeners. I wish you all the very best in your endeavors.
Thank you so much for having me, Hailmary. This was really wonderful. And really, thank you so much for the opportunity. And I look forward to listening in to the final recording.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoy our conversations, please like and subscribe. See you next Wednesday.